Canada's broken immigration system is spilling onto the streets and creating chaos and division like we have never seen in Canada before. But instead of focusing on fixing Canada, our parliament has devolved into a farce that cares more about terrorists than it does about Canadians and Canadian citizens. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is The Candace Malcolm Show. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. We've been talking about immigration a lot at True North and on the Candace Malcolm Show lately. I've broken down the numbers and basically how the government has allowed immigration to balloon to allowing over 2 million people to come into Canada each year. In 2023, we had over 2 million, and how illegal immigration in Canada has hit an all-time high. I've spent time talking about how the Trudeau Liberals have changed the laws to make things easier for poor students and wannabe refugees to come into Canada, and how many take advantage of these changes to further thwart our immigration system, undermine the safeguards, and undermine the stability of our immigration system and our very country. This isn't just a mathematical equation, though. They're not just numbers, they're not just figures. There's so much more, and you can see the changes, you can see the problems spilling out into our country, on the streets, in the malls, in cities, and really we're witnessing unbelievable social consequences of immigration. And you can see the impact literally every single day in the news. I'm going to walk you through a couple of main news stories here that are really just showing the state of how bad things have become in Canada. Before I do that, don't forget to like this video. Please subscribe to our True North channel if you're new around here. If you enjoy the podcast and you're listening to it, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. And finally, don't forget to head over to our website, tnc.news. You can sign up for our newsletter so you never miss a story and you never miss an episode of The Candace Malcolm Show. Okay, so here are just a few news stories just illustrating this point. This is just from March of 2024. So first story I want to highlight here is that the Toronto Police told residents to make your keys more accessible to auto thieves in order to prevent home invasions and dangerous situations with criminals. Here is what that looked like.
Constable Marco Ricciardi had a new message for vehicle owners who keep their fobs in Faraday pouches.
To prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs at your front door. Because they're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else. A lot of them that they're arresting have guns on them, and they're not toy guns, they're real guns. They're loaded.
They have it, real guns. They're loaded. Look at those concerned Toronto citizens, senior citizens, sitting and listening to this. A cop telling you, just leave your keys at the front door, let the thieves have what they want. You really don't want to get into an altercation with these people because they have guns that are real guns that are loaded. They will kill you. You know, I'm old enough to remember a few years ago when Justin Trudeau banned a whole bunch of guns from legal gun owners in Canada. True North's Andrew Lawton did a whole documentary exposing this. And we were told that that was going to fix the whole problem of gun crime that has exploded into cities like Toronto in recent years. Well, I guess that didn't work because the criminals still have guns that are loaded and they're prepared to use them to kill you, according to Toronto police. So I've got some stats on what he's talking about. A car was stolen every 40 minutes in Toronto last year. Carjackings have doubled in 2024 so far. This has become a very widespread problem. I'm not saying it's directly caused by immigration, but I do know that many of the people that are partaking in these crime rings, we know, I mean, Pierre Poilievre held a press conference a couple of months ago where he talked about how these cars would just go straight to the port of Montreal onto a boat and they'd be sent over to North Africa and the Middle East. And, you know, these cars are getting stolen and they're quickly leaving Canada. They're not staying in Canada. So the problem is an international problem. And the people who are convicted of these crimes, I mean, the police are often very tight-lipped about who they're arresting and who's behind them. But I did find this story in Global News about how the police arrested 8 suspects in a carjacking ring. So let me just read you a little bit from that story. It says here, an Ontario Police Task Force says investigators have charged 8 suspects after an investigation into carjacking across the Greater Toronto area. They say the arrests came after they followed an allegedly stolen Mercedes, arresting 2 groups of people who met with its occupants. The carjackings allegedly included a Mercedes-Benz and 2 Aston Martins. January 21st, police said 4 suspects went into 2 homes in Peel Region within just hours of each other. They forced entry, demanding keys to a vehicle at the homes, police said. They stole a BMW and a Mercedes. The following day, police said four suspects went into a home in Toronto, allegedly stole a Mercedes-Benz. The suspects confronted the homeowners for his keys, and two Aston Martins were taken, police said. So I guess this is what that police officer was talking about. The suspects will come into your home with loaded guns, prepared to use them, confront car owners just so that they can steal your cars. This is a huge problem in Toronto. I've heard of so many people, by the way, who are just absolutely terrified to drive nice cars in nice neighborhoods because this is happening so frequently. I've heard of people installing metal poles in their driveways to stop, to deter criminals from coming and stealing their cars in the middle of the night. Let me just read a little more from this global story. It says, police said the carjacking task force investigators followed the Mercedes G-Wagon, saw the suspects meet with a Honda CR-V, and four people were arrested. Investigators have charged Mohammed Siddiqui, 41, of Mississauga, Mahmoud Fayez, 40, of Markham, Farmozi Harwali, 39, of Toronto, and Asad Mayo, 27, of Mississauga, with possession of property obtained by crime. So again, you get an idea of the folks who are behind it. I'm not saying they're immigrants per se. They could be born in Canada, but certainly this is a problem that we never used to see in Canada. I remember growing up and I had a friend who moved from South Africa, and they told me a story about how his family had been carjacked one night coming home from like an opera. And it was so terrifying to imagine what he went through. And I remember thinking, wow, South Africa is a really messed up country if they allow, you know, that kind of lawlessness, like someone driving in their car with their family, confronted at gunpoint, forced out of the car and stolen. To me, that was like the mark of a failed society, of a failed state, like complete anarchy and lawlessness. And yet here we are, and it's happening every 40 minutes in Canada, in Toronto. It's happening all over the country. Really, really scary stuff that is happening in Canada. That's not the only evidence that there's social erosion happening as a result of Canada's open border immigration system. I want to talk about something else that's happening, which is the tribal hatred that's spilling into our streets. So here is a clip from an event that happened over the weekend in Calgary, Alberta, where two different groups of protesters basically clashed, and we saw sort of ugly tribalism spilling out on our streets in Canada. Let's play that clip. So there we had Sikh separatists, part of a group called Calistinians, and this is a group in particular called Sikhs for Justice, a group, by the way, that is banned in India. India considers it to be a terrorist group, and the leader of that group is a terrorist in India. While in Canada, they're organizing rallies, hate rallies, and you can see that they're using their daggers, ceremonial Sikh daggers, which are protected part of Canadian life. Sikhs are allowed to carry these daggers in places where you normally wouldn't be able to carry a knife. They're allowed to carry them through schools and airports. They have all kinds of special privileges carved out of our law because we're told that they're strictly ceremonial. Well, in this case, they were using them to slash a Indian flag and being very provocative to the counter-protests who were Hindu. So, you know, we have an instance where tribal hatreds, ancient hatreds from India have been imported into Canada. And you have Sikhs and Hindus, rather than living side by side in peace, you have, you know, the hate spilling out that you can see on the streets. And it happens with some frequency in cities like Calgary and places in and around Toronto. And of course, it's not just Hindus and Sikhs who have brought their tribal hatreds into Canada that are clashing on the streets in Canada, being exported from India. We also have Middle Eastern politics being exported into Canada. So you can see this, the scene at outside synagogues that are being protested by pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas Muslim protesters, bringing their hatred, their tribal hatred towards Jews and Israelis into Canada. This is the scene at a Toronto area synagogue in Thornhill earlier in March. You can see from the protesters. You can see what they're doing, right? They're pulling Israeli flags. They're trying to intimidate the Jewish community at a place of worship in Canada. This is a result of our immigration system. This is a result of Big M multiculturalism, the cult of multiculturalism that tells newcomers, you don't have to change anything about yourself, about your beliefs, about your ideas, about your values. When you come to Canada, just come to Canada. We'll celebrate you exactly as you are. Well, apparently that includes people who have tribal hatreds against groups, and they bring that warring mentality and those clashes erupt in Canada. Is just a regular feature of Canadian society these days. Another example that we see in the news and on social media is these incredibly long queues for minimum wage jobs. So we have long lineups, mostly of international students, mostly of newcomers that don't speak English that are here in Canada looking for minimum wage jobs. So here is a queue outside of a liquor store in London, Ontario. You can see they're jostling and trying to push each other around just to get in, to get an interview to potentially work a minimum wage job. Here we have another clip from Woodbridge, Ontario. Hundreds and hundreds of men, mostly, trying to get a job at a tire company, Tire Hotel, which sells tires in Woodbridge, Ontario. I'm seeing hundreds. There's multiple lines snaking in and around, queuing. We've seen this over and over again in Canada over the past several months, which is kind of ironic because the government tells us, the immigration minister tells us, that the reason that we have so many foreign workers, so many international students come in, is because we have labor shortages in Canada, that Canadians aren't willing to do certain jobs, and that we need to bring in people to be employed in low-paying jobs. According to Statistics Canada, a study found that there are basically three sectors that make up about 40% of all temporary workers, and they're low-wage positions. We're talking about food services, retail and trade, and waste management. So they're kind of taking the jobs that Canadian teenagers used to have, especially when you see them queuing up to try to work at Tim Hortons and Walmart and places like the LCBO, which is just a government-owned liquor store here in Ontario, really not building the economy in the way that I think the Liberals want you to believe, which is why we had a professor of economics over at Waterloo show this graph saying how Canada's GDP has grown by 1% in 2022 and 23, while our population grew by 3%. So that means that our real GDP per capita is actually falling 2%, roughly the difference. And he shows this, that without immigration, we would have zero economic growth in this country for more than 6 years. So that is the legacy of Justin Trudeau. This is the legacy that he has left behind. Okay, so what is the government doing to fix all this stuff, right? We have all these problems that are pretty much either a direct or indirect result of our out-of-control immigration system. Let's say 2 million people each year, even though we don't have jobs or houses or places for these people to live. They don't fit in culturally. We haven't had any time to integrate them into our economy, integrate them into our communities, and let them develop a Canadian identity. We just keep bringing more and more and more and more in every year. Canada's dealing with endless domestic problems, an affordability crisis, a housing crisis, staggering inflation, and a stagnant economy. And rather than focusing on Canada or Canadians, our parliament is completely focused on what? On appeasing immigrants, on vote bank politics. So making sure that all the newcomers that are coming into Canada will remain loyal to Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party. And this is how they do it. We've seen the Liberals talking out of both sides of their mouth when it comes to the conflict between Hamas terrorists and Canada's democratic ally, Israel. And so over the weekend, we saw Trudeau send his foreign minister, Melanie Joly, over to the West Bank to meet with a top terrorist over there. For good measure, they also sent York Centre MP Yara Sachs. Yara Sachs represents probably the most Jewish riding in all of Canada. And they sent them to meet with a terrorist. This is what that looked like. Here's a photo with them with Mahmoud Abbas. So, of course, many people were absolutely shocked by this. They say it's absolutely shameful to see, you know, look, Melanie Joly is a foreign minister. It's her job to meet with foreign leaders, including dictators and nasty people. But she doesn't have to be so giddy about it, right? She doesn't have to be leaning in for a jolly handshake to show how pleased she is to be meeting with this terrorist. And I have no idea why Yara Sachs is there. She is, like I said, the MP for York Center, which is probably the most heavily concentrated Jewish electoral district or riding in all of Canada. And she is her post has nothing to do with foreign policy. She's a minister, junior minister for mental health and addiction. So why is she there in the first place? It's a very good question. And who is this man that they're meeting with that they're so happy to be meeting with? This isn't just a business meeting. They're all holding hands. They're all smiling and holding hands, and they just look like it's like a family reunion or something like that. Well, Mahmoud Abbas, the man in the middle, is the head of the Palestinian state. He represents Hamas's main rival party. He won an election in 2005, and he has never held an election since. So he's in the 18th year of a four-year term. We like to call that a dictator. Prior to being the dictator of the West Bank, this man has a long history of terrorism. He was a financier of the Munich Olympic kidnapping back in 1972, where 9 Israeli athletes were taken hostage. A few of them were murdered. There's a movie about that. Before that, he was an academic, basically has his PhD in Holocaust denialism. He's praised Adolf Hitler, and he's still very openly and very proudly anti-Semitic. In his time as president of the Palestinian Authority, he refused to participate in peace talks with Israel, refused to even come to the table. He continues to lie about the October 7th attacks on families in Israel, and he says that they were carried out by Israelis and not Palestinians. And he funds a so-called martyrs fund. So he pays family members of dead terrorists a salary as a reward for killing Jews. So this is who the Canadian ministers are so happy and so proud to be meeting with, an absolute monster. Now, I want to go back to that picture for a second, because there's something that I don't think a lot of people in the media recognized about this photo, which is the lapel pin on Mahmoud Abbas's chest. So if we could just zoom into that a little bit, see that little key right there? That key symbolizes something called the right of return. This is a very contentious idea that is maintained by only the most hardline pro-Palestinian activists and terrorists. And the idea is that anyone who claims a Palestinian identity, keep in mind, this is an identity that has been invented in the last 50 years or so, anyone who identifies as Palestinian has the right to live in Israel. So that's why we have a situation where we have third generation refugees who live across the world who call themselves Palestinian refugees. This is a policy intentionally designed to flood Israel with Jew-hating Palestinians who would simply vote to eliminate the Israeli state, eliminate Jews and Jewish rule in Israel. This is obviously a total deal breaker for any peace talks. Israel absolutely refuses to talk about this so-called right of return, because it would be the end of Jews in the Middle East. It's not a two-state solution. It is a one-state solution. It is calling for one state, a Muslim Palestinian state. In other words, it's a pin calling for either ethnic cleansing or worse, genocide of Jews in Israel. And this is what our giddy liberal foreign affairs minister is posing with and shaking hands with. It is a total disgrace and an embarrassment. And that's not the only disgrace and embarrassment going on, because the liberals at the exact same time were also talking about supporting a radical NDP motion that calls for the unilateral recognition of the Palestinian state. So this was all happening over the weekend. Jagmeet Singh tabled a non-binding anti-Israel motion to call on the government to go ahead and just recognize Palestinian state. Forget about peace talks, forget about Israel, forget about negotiating borders. They just wanted to go ahead and call for Canada to break with our 50-year standing policy when it comes to Israel and Palestine by simply recognizing Palestine. So I broke this over the weekend. On Saturday morning, I wrote on Twitter, breaking, I'm hearing the Libs are having an emergency caucus meeting today on the NDP's Gaza motion. So sources are allowing a free vote for backbenchers and junior ministers, but they're still trying to decide whether cabinet will get a free vote. Two, certainly sounds like they're going to support this NDP motion. I wrote, the final clause of the NDP motion is to officially recognize the state of Palestine, maintains Canada's recognition of Israel's right to exist and live in peace with its neighbors, which is obviously a contradiction of the first part in recognizing a Palestinian state. So we're talking about unilateral recognition of Palestine for the very first time as a direct result of 10/7 and those terrorist attacks. That's a hell of a message to send. Just a note there. You can see I spelled the word breaking wrong. I was playing with my kids. I talked to a source. I quickly typed up the tweet, and then I had to put my phone away because I had to pay attention to my kids for a bit. And then later I picked up my phone and I just decided to add braking at the top, and I sent it out, and I realized later that I put the wrong kind of braking, missed the E there. So that was a little embarrassing, but I did try to rectify it later. And so, of course, my reporting was confirmed later by the Toronto Star, which said that during that caucus meeting, it was a lot of division within the Liberal Party, and that 50 MPs indicated that they were going to support the extreme measure, again, breaking with Canada's 50-year foreign policy. So this was all set to go through the House of Commons on Monday evening. And then at the last minute, the Liberals just totally changed everything and tried to amend everything. This is what independent MP Kevin Vaughan tweeted. He said, there are 14 last-minute amendments submitted by the Trudeau government in the 11th hour to an NDP motion with 21 points. So they amended two-thirds of this thing. And this tweet, by the way, was sent out at 8:40 p.m. on Monday. The vote was supposed to happen at 5 p.m. And so they were absolutely scrambling. Apparently it was chaotic in the House of Commons, just a total gong show. So Vaughan continues, he said 66% of the motion is amended. It's so last minute, there isn't even French translation. This is not how you make policy, never mind for something so substantive as Canadian foreign policy. So again, before the vote, the Libs scrambled to make 14 last-minute amendments and didn't even include the French version. This is a ham-fisted attempt to fake a solution to get themselves out of political hot water because they couldn't stop their more extreme members of their caucus from basically pandering to the worst terrorists on the planet. So basically, they came up with some new wording. And with that, the motion passed 204 to 117. A couple of Liberal MPs voted against it, including Anthony Housefather, Mendicino, and Carr. So the only Jewish MP, I believe, in the Liberal caucus to vote for it was Yara Sachs, the one who had just met with Mahmoud Abbas. Notably, Cabinet and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau voted in favor of this motion, which is still pretty radical. So this whole chaotic scene on Monday evening in the House of Commons was rather indicative of where we are as a country. We have NDP MPs wearing kippahs during the vote, sort of cosplaying as if they're part of the revolution, part of the Palestinians. We later had an NDP MP come out after the vote during a press conference and pledge that she will work day in and day out every single day, not for you, not for Canadians, but for the Palestinian people. Here's what that looked like.
And I'm going to be coming back every single day into this House of Commons and demanding the rights for Palestinian people.
So she's not working day in and day out for Canadians, certainly not for the people of Edmonton Strathcona, the district that she supposedly represents. I used to live in that riding where the University of Alberta is. She's not focused on that. She's focused on day in and day out being there for the Palestinian people and fighting for their rights. What a great metaphor for Canada's foreign policy, for our immigration system, for Justin Trudeau and his governing coalition more broadly. They prioritize foreign politics over our own. They turn a blind eye to warring tribes and hatred that is erupting and has been imported into Canada through our open border immigration system. And everything they do, every policy decision, foreign policy or domestic policy, is all determined not by principle, not by morals, not by values, but by votes, by how many votes they can obtain by taking a certain position. They wish to be all things to all people. They play these cute little games with politics where they try to appease both sides. They give both messages, different messages to different communities, and they really just want to be all things to all people. And as a consequence, as a result, Canada's social fabric is coming apart. Canadians are clashing. Canadians are not being represented, and the ones that are openly taking advantage of our generosity and using their platform to promote their hate in Canada. Ironically, we have an online harms bill that's supposedly going to be cracking down on hate speech. It's not going to be cracking down on this kind of hate. It's not going to be cracking down on the tribal hatreds that we see in our streets. It's going to be cracking down on commentary and journalism and views that Justin Trudeau doesn't like. This is all a result of Justin Trudeau's failed policies, including his failed policy when it comes to mass migration. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is The Candace Malcolm Show.